Just imagine that you're living your best life that God gave you. But then suddenly, without warning, you are now accused of a crime that you did not commit. Now from living your best life, you're living your worst life. Well, on this week's installment, inside the Shame Free Life podcast studio, we're going to have a candid discussion by asking a relevant question. Can the criminal injustice system be reformed?
Today is about the power of you.
We can be whatever we dream.
You're locked into another episode of 15 Minutes of Shame. Each week, we'll help you rebuild your life one brick at a time by addressing real life issues from a practical and biblical perspective.
I had to believe in myself like never before.
This is the Shame Free Radio Show.
Finding a solution to become the greatest.
And now your host, minister, author, grief and trauma support specialist, Dr. Ronald Zion Rose.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is it.
Good morning, good evening, good night, wherever you are, from around the globe, coast to coast, you're locked inside of another installment inside the Shame Free Life podcast studio. I am your host, Ronald Zion, and it's always a pleasure to be back with the Shame Free Life family once again. And we are definitely going to tackle an issue that I believe that is one of those taboo issues, but all praises to the Most High God because of technology and, of course, social media, and also having that computer in your purse or your pocket that we label as a smartphone. We're able to get information instantly on an updated basis. And the title of this podcast, once again, can the criminal injustice system be reformed? But before we get into it, I want to take a quick commercial break. Well, breaks. Let's go ahead and get them out of the way. Then we're going to jump into this this riveting conversation concerning the reality of the criminal, some say justice system, others say injustice system. Well, before the end of the show, we will certainly look at statistics and facts, and we will allow you to come to the conclusion, can the criminal injustice system truly be reformed? Let's take a quick break or breaks, and we will return momentarily. Have you considered continuing your education? Or do you find yourself, like so many, sidetracked by life, fear, or maybe even excuses? Well, I've come to tell you that there is absolutely no perfect time than right now. Time is ticking away. So get your degree today. Rehoboth International Bible College is an accredited university designed to meet your higher biblical education needs. Simply go to RehobothInternationalBibleCollege.com or call 866-235-0812 extension 0. You are an investment, so it is past time for you to reap the dividends. Rehoboth International Bible College. Have you ever felt alone and life is out of control? Perhaps like a sailboat at sea in the midst of a tsunami. Well, you're not alone. Here at the Shame Free Life LLC, we offer services in trauma recovery, crisis intervention, and empowerment coaching. We operate in integrity, confidentiality, empathy, with coaching ethics. Contact us at theshamefreelife.com. or email us at contact@theshamefreelife.com. You may not be responsible for your injury, but you are responsible for your healing. Let us help you rebuild your life one brick at a time, because your life begins when you say so. be responsible for what injured you or who injured you, but you are definitely responsible for your own healing. And the Shame Free Life platform is one of many platforms that are out there that will walk with you down your road to self-discovery, but also inner healing. So let's get right to the topic that's at hand. Can the criminal injustice system be reformed? Now, I'm pretty sure that there are many people that are involved in the criminal justice system to whatever degree or position. And this is in no way. And let me put my disclaimers out there before I really begin to move and transition into the subject matter. There are many that are listening that are involved in the criminal justice system to whatever degree, whatever functionality in which you are in that position. And that is great. And so this is in no way, shape or form an indictment against you personally. I really believe, and I come from the school of thought, as the old elders used to tell me, that when you throw a rock in a pack full of dogs, the only dog that holler is the dog that got hit. So if you did not get hit by the rock, then there's no need for a response from you. But if, in fact, you get hit by the rock of truth, by the rock of statistics, by the rock of statistical data that backs up the assertion that one is making, well, then if the shoe fits, then by all means, put it on. So we're going to get right into this topic. But first, let me point out a couple of stats and facts. And I'm one of those individuals, and this is the second and final disclaimer, that I have a problem with injustice. I don't care if you're black, if you're white, if you're Latino, if you're male, female, a dog, a cat, a kangaroo. I have a problem with injustice. Just as my Heavenly Father and His Son, Yeshua, Jesus, the Messiah, had a problem with injustice. And those who understand righteousness or who practice the principles of righteousness hear and obey. And so we are of the same DNA as it relates to instituting righteousness in an unrighteous world. And especially when we're dealing with systems that bar none have shown themselves to be unrighteous as well. So let's take a look at some stats that came by way of the Innocence Project. There are so many nonprofit organizations out there, such as the ExodusFoundation.org, such as Pinnacle Community Outreach. There are so many nonprofits, faith-based organizations, and I hats off to you and I salute you for actually implementing the kingdom of God in the earth by addressing the ills of the people that were created by the Most High for His glory and to fulfill their earthly purpose. So I salute you. And again, regardless of who you are, I think it was Martin Luther King, and it was who made it adamantly clear that injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere. Regardless of your tax bracket, regardless of your zip code, if there lies injustice, there lies a problem that awaits a solution. Now, let's take a look at some stats and facts from the Innocence Project that's doing phenomenal work in every community from coast to coast and around the globe. 3,555 years Innocence Project clients collectively spent wrongfully incarcerated. 3,555 years. 232 Innocence Project victories are up to date. So thus far, and this is not counting those who are innocent, but were found guilty in the court of lawlessness. But to date, the Innocence Project have under their legal belt victories of 232 cases. 5% of the 232 people pled guilty to crimes they didn't commit. 5%. 10% of the 232 people were sentenced to death. Now, this backs up. Now, these are staggering statistics that you're hearing. And I invite you to go to, because I always cite my references, go to theinnocenceproject.org. I adjure you. Also, if you go to the Pew Institute research, that the Pew Institute, they also backed up this reality that 10% of the 232 people that were sentenced to death, because they cited that 1 in 9 people on death row are innocent. 1 in 9. So my question to you, how many people have gone to the grave by way of lethal injection, by way of the gas chamber, by way of the electric chair, fried to death, by way of the firing squad? How many lives were cut short and they were innocent, but spent the remaining of their days on death row to die, to lose their lives for a crime that they did not commit? Let's move on with statistics. 1 in 9 people on death row, we talked about that, that are innocent. Now, please go to the Pew Foundation. Let's transition. 62 is the estimated number of exonerees who have not received compensation for wrongful convictions. 14 states do not have a compensation at all. Now, this is very interesting, because now we're talking about adding insult to injury. It's not enough. And we're going to get into the traumatic reality later in the broadcast. But it's not enough to take someone's freedom that was given to them by their creator, the Most High God, unjustly. But then not only taking their freedom, now you tarnish their criminal record. And if that is not enough, once you release them from the belly of the beast, now the belly of the beast vomits them out. Whether they max out their entire sentence, still maintaining their innocence, or the belly of the beast vomit them out by way of being exonerated from the crime that they did not commit, or the belly of the beast vomits them out by way of a funeral home, by being placed on death row and have surpassed or met the execution date. Now, here, according to the Innocence Project, are some common causes of wrongful conviction. 63% involved eyewitnesses misidentification. 17% involved informants. 52% involved misapplied forensic science or precursorial misconduct. 62% involved false confessions. Now, again, these statistical data you can find certainly on the Innocence Project, innocenceproject.org website. Go there, as well as the Pew Research Institute as well. Now, let's put a face on this, because if there are a total number of years of 3,555 years that are spliced between, that we know of, 232 people, we're not talking about the people that were coerced into a plea deal, a plea bargain with the district attorney, and the district attorney knew that this person is innocent, or there's reasonable doubt to say, hey, wait a minute, something's wrong with this case. But anyway, to get the kickbacks that I need and those around me, I need you to take this plea. You cop this plea and, you know, hey, instead of 15 years, you get 5 years. Instead of 25 years, you get 10 years or 3 years and 2 years probation. We'll let you think about it for 20 minutes. We'll be back for an answer. So when we talk about prosecutorial misconduct, this fits in the Innocence Project's statistics as it relates to the 52% of those cases that are coerced, such as the Brian Banks case and how he was falsely accused of attempting to rape a young girl while he was in Long Beach Polytech High School, awaiting to get to college. And the pro scouts had already said he is the number one linebacker whenever it is time for him to go pro. In the draft, he will be selected number one, at least number two. But we don't see him falling to the second round at all. But that never happened because of being coerced as a 16-year-old boy to sign a cop a plea deal with the prosecution that knew that he was innocent. But we're not going to put his face on it because he came out with the movie and Brian is doing well and God has blessed him. He's married with a beautiful child and he's living his best life. The NFL hired him. And so now he's doing a mighty work in the NFL as it relates to character development and making sure that those young guys coming into the NFL understand that, listen, this is not a rap video and this is not a game. This is your life. And I'm here to help you live your best life, not a reckless life, or find yourself in a situation like I was in. So let me help you. But there are many men and women that don't have that luxury. So we're going to introduce you to one of those individuals that was falsely accused by a prominent and well-known author. And so I'm going to roll the tape. And this came from NBC News. And this will serve as a backdrop before we move into my commentary and begin to answer the question, can the criminal injustice system be reformed? Let's check this out. And I really want you to listen and zero in on this case that happened back in 1981. And it was just recently brought to surface on an international scale to now bring forth some justice for Anthony Broadwater. And here we go.
Tonight, tears of relief, nearly 40 years in the making.
I'm still crying with joy and relief right now today. I'm really overwhelmed. Words can't describe it.
Anthony Broadwater exonerated by a New York State Supreme Court judge this week at 61 years old, after spending most of his life paying for a crime he didn't commit.
With joy and relief, I went up to the gravesite to see my dad to tell him. I wish to God he was here.
Broadwater was 20 when he was charged with the rape of Alice Siebold, who went on to write bestseller The Lovely Bones. The alleged crime happened in 1981 at a park in Syracuse, New York. Siebold described the attack in detail almost 20 years later in Lucky, a book that launched her career as an author. Her next hit, The Lovely Bones, was later adapted into an award-winning film. But all this was after Broadwater was convicted for first-degree rape and 5 related charges. He spent 16 years in prison. Through the years, he maintained his innocence. After serving his sentence, he quickly realized his life would never be the same.
The moment I stepped out, it was like impossible to get a job. These 10 fingers I can count on my hand of the people that accept me in their household. I can't get past 10.
He never stopped trying through appeals, motions, and even 2 polygraph tests to prove his innocence. But nothing worked. Until a film producer working on a screen adaptation of Siebold's book Lucky hired a private investigator to look into the evidence presented against Broadwater in court. They became convinced Broadwater was telling the truth.
Together, as we looked through the trial transcript, we realized, wow, this was a bogus conviction.
Earlier this month, Broadwater's new lawyers filed a motion to vacate his conviction based on now discredited scientific evidence and Siebold's identification of Broadwater as the perpetrator.
No one questions that Ms. Siebold was sexually assaulted. She absolutely was. But she saw Mr. Broadwater on the street about 5 months later, had a feeling this was the person who had raped her, and reported it to police.
She is asked to look at the individuals at some point in the lineup, and she picks out number 5. Anthony Broadwater was number 4.
Attorneys say they learned the next part of the story from Siebold's book, which they presented to the court as new evidence.
After that, the prosecutor walks in the room and begins to tell her, well, you picked the wrong guy, but essentially, don't worry, your hunch is correct. It actually is number 4.
Despite not picking him out of the lineup, at the trial, Siebold claimed Broadwater was the perpetrator. In a statement on Broadwater, the Onondaga County District Attorney, who supported the exoneration, said in part, "It is never too late to do the right thing." A spokesperson for Scribner, the publisher of Lucky, telling NBC News neither Alice Siebold nor Scribner has any comment. Scribner has no plans to update the text of Lucky at this time.
Now that you've been exonerated, what does the rest of your life look like?
I hope, right? I hope that I can give some inspiration to somebody and say, hey, if you're not guilty of something, do not give in. I've been yelling and screaming and exhausting all my finances to prove my innocence. It finally came.
Now, Broadwater says he can finally rest. Isa Gutierrez, NBC News.
Thanks for watching.
Okay, there you have it. And so this is the face that we are working with and that we have on illustration for this podcast, Anthony Broadwater. And you heard all of the damaging but real issues surrounding this case and how this case was broken and exposed for what it really is. I want to take a look at Alice Siebold. And before we even get into commentary, because I think that this is a perfect segue to add to what you just heard in your hearing by way of NBC News concerning the case of Anthony Broadwater, which there's an Anthony Broadwater in every continent, every country, every municipality, state, county, and city. There's an Anthony Broadwater. But we're just making him the poster child of not only being victimized by this bastardized system that is labeled, and rightfully so, the criminal injustice system, but also to expose those who profit from his demise. Now enter Alice Siebold, who is an award-winning author and also benefited from her screen production in Hollywood. And as it was said that this particular attack happened in 1981 as she was 18 years old in Syracuse University. So she went on to write the book, the memoir, Lucky. Now, Lucky went on to sell more than 1 million copies. And I took the liberty to find out exactly what does her financial portfolio look like. Now, there are many nuances to this that I was not privy to, but this will give you a bird's eye look into how she has profited, but how Anthony Broadwater was marginalized, not just from a freedom standpoint, but from an economical standpoint, because once he was released, vomited out of the belly of the beast of doing all of the 16 years, but still maintaining his innocence, still maintaining his integrity in the midst of being marginalized by society, in the midst of having to register as a sex offender, of going back to a community, many don't want you there. Most will embrace you, and some just don't understand you. Having doors shut in your face, can't get a job at Jack in the Box, can't get a job at Amazon, can't get a job at any type of major corporation that you will be able to contribute to your home from a financial economical standpoint. That you can truly benefit from the capitalistic society in which you were vomited back into. But the resources that he did have, as NBC eloquently noted, or as he noted on NBC rather, that he exhausted everything to try to prove his innocence. But it wasn't until the producer, my God, you know, it's something about God. He always has a ram in the bush. Just when you're counted out, just when you're marginalized and ostracized, God always have a ram in the bush. Whether you are Abraham or whether you are Joseph of the Bible, who was also falsely imprisoned and accused for attempting to rape Potiphar's wife, a military commander's wife, which he did not do. But God always have a ram in the bush. What do you mean, Ronald Zion, a ram in the bush? Well, simply means that you may think that you're getting away, but God will always come to the rescue somehow, somewhere. And so here is a producer that, according to the NBC report, left the production of Lucky with a lot of questions, but no answers. There's something sketchy here that's just not right concerning what she said. So he went in his own bank account. We don't know if he was a so-called Christian or not, but I will tell you he was being used by the Most High God to do oftentimes what we Christians fail to do.
God today.
We talk about it, we sing about it, we preach about justice, but when it comes to putting boots to the ground, when it comes to going in our own bank account, when it comes to trying to go to bat for somebody, we oftentimes don't. As a matter of fact, we always sing these songs about Jesus and we love you and Father, we adore you. And I wish I was there and I would say, release him. No, if many of us were there, we would be on the crowd. We would be with the crowd of the majority. Hey, listen, crucify him and release Barabbas. Release the one who did the crime, but lock up the one who didn't do the crime. I digress on that for now. But when we look at how Alice Siebold profited from her lies and her treachery, it is amazing. So Lucky, the memoir that she wrote that catapulted her literary prominence as an author and screenwriter of a film, sold more than 1 million copies. Now, Lucky, that memoir sold $20 per book, give or take. So we're talking about a profit of more than $20 million. Now, this opened the floodgates for her next book, which caught the attention of Hollywood producers and directors, to now let us make this book into a movie. And I'm speaking of Lovely Bones by Alice Siebold. Lovely Bones sold per copy at $20, okay? Now, when I begin to do my due diligence to find out, well, how many copies of this book did the liar Alice Sebold sell? And my findings took me to more than, here we go, this is not an accurate account, so more than 8 million copies. So if we're talking about $20 a book here, give or take, now on this particular project, she made over or grossed over $160 million. I'm going to let that sink in. The first book, Lucky, over, we don't know how much, but over, she grossed over $20 million for that book. Lovely Bones, she grossed over $160 million, which led her to this particular book, which was translated in 2009 into a screenplay, which we know as a movie. So this movie, Lovely Bones, in 2009 was an Oscar nominated movie, which brings me to, well, if she made that much money from her authorship, how much money did Alice the Liar Sebold make in the box office? Well, we know that the majority of the money is going back to the studios, where the studio has to get its cut. And there's so many, their management agencies and handlers and et cetera, lawyers understand that. But I want this to be in your hearing. That the domestic box office, how much Lovely Bones grossed in 2009 was $44,114,000. $44,114,000. Well, $44,114,000. I'm getting ready to move on to the next one. Now, the international box office, this is how much she grossed, or the movie grossed, that is, $50,780,000. Now, worldwide, this is a collective of both domestic and international revenue, that worldwide, Alice Sebold, the movie Lovely Bones, grossed $94,894,000. Now, this is not including speaking honorariums. This is not including at all paid appearances. This is certainly not including any financial investments that she has in her portfolio. This is how much money she has prospered off of a lie that took the life of Anthony Broadwater, whose wife always wanted to have children. Now at 61 years old, what are the chances of that happening? So when we look at, now here comes the commentary. When we look at anyone who was violated, and there's so many people that are violated, so many women that are violated, molested, raped, etc. And there's trauma that is attached to that. And there is a justice that should be attached to that. There should be no miscarriage in justice when a woman is violated. But what happens when a man is violated by being accused of a rape or attempted rape of something, a crime that he did not commit, and now his life is snuffed from him, while those who make that assertion or fabricate that lie, they profit from his demise. As you have heard the financial readings of Alice Sebold. There is something to this that I think that we can all draw from. That everyone that walks around that you see on the street doesn't mean that they're innocent. And every person that's locked up doesn't mean that they're guilty. When we talk about the trauma of men, especially black men. Now they are white. See, this particular system, not it attacks the vulnerable and the weak, regardless of your nationality. Because I believe that the Innocence Project, they have asserted that 33 to 34% of their cases of exonerees are white. However, 55 are black. Well, we already understand that the system was never made for us. It was made against us and to protect those who are the real perpetrators. OK. So when we begin to look at the trauma that affects the mind of one who was falsely imprisoned, falsely accused, you can't even fathom it. Here you are, you're taken out of civilian life and you are thrusted into a culture and into an environment, moreover into a world that is foreign to you, where there is gangs, where there are real predators that'll take your life because they don't have a max out date. They have 25 years plus a box cart of 30 years, and then they got to be expedited back to another state to do another 10 years and also another 7.5 years. So they will never see the streets again. But you will. And they hot about that. So if you look at them the wrong way, I can put a knife in you. They can make up something just to kill you, to relieve that demonic stress that they have on the inside and the reality that they will never see the streets like you will. So when you talk about that type of pressure and stress of those that are around you, that are called inmates, but those residents around you, now you have to deal with the sights and the sounds of so much that goes on, from, you know, cats in the shower masturbating to chicks that are COs, correctional officers, that is, that are posting up that the prisoners can get a shot at them as they're posted up in a seductive manner to masturbate. Now you are seeing all of this around you, and that's foreign to you. You never been in this kind of environment. You're hearing men get raped, or you're hearing about men getting raped. You're seeing men come in as strong men, but leave out with tight pants on and switching and twitching because they've been turned out by another man or multiple men, gang rape. You're seeing drugs being filtered in the prison. People smoking drugs, injecting drugs, drugs being brought in by families, drugs being brought in by correctional officers. How do you think they get in? So there's so many different dynamics of the sights and the sounds of a prison that affects the very psyche that places you, according to the DSM-5, in a category of post-traumatic stress disorder. Post-traumatic stress disorder affects not only the functionality of the brain, but moreover the emotions, the circuitry, the neurological functionality of our brain. It affects our emotions, how we govern ourselves, our self-esteem or lack thereof, how we see ourselves. And so it produces hypervigilance. It produces sleep deprivation, can't get any sleep. It produces flashbacks. It produces triggers, can be triggered at any given time. It produces fear and paranoia. It produces depression, and in many instances, suicide, because there's statistical data that also support that those who have been incarcerated are 8 times more likely to commit suicide. Well, if those who are incarcerated are 8 times more likely to commit suicide, what is the percentage of those who were innocent but put in prison, those who were innocent but convicted and sentenced, what does the statistics look like for them? I would submit to you that it is greater than 8%. When we also look at the reality of trauma, and this is the premise of the platform of the Shame Free Life. We deal with so many different issues that deal with shame. We deal with so many different subject matters, and I totally get that. But we also are committed to trauma recovery because we believe that you can recover. But when we look at the trauma, and not just the trauma that Anthony Broadwater and so many others have to deal with even now that they are released, but now you are released back into a society that doesn't want you. Released back into a society that has an apartheid system. Now you're placed in a secondary category as a second class citizen. You will no longer be able to be gainfully employed in companies that you had before your prior conviction and false sentencing. So now you have to take entry level jobs and jobs that would never afford you the reality of now being able to truly benefit from a free enterprise system, but will keep you, that's designed to keep you in a place of poverty that only stimulates more stressors as it relates to your trauma. So now we're talking about compounded trauma. Now, according to Dr. Bessel van der Kolk, who's world renowned, he says that when you're talking about surviving trauma, there are three ways that trauma can even change your brain. Now, we're not just talking about the emotional part of it all that I just alluded to as far as the sleep deprivation, et cetera, flashbacks, hypervigilance, and so many other categories and characteristics of post-traumatic stress disorder. But now we're talking about how we can literally physically change the brain. Number one, Dr. van der Kolk said, number one is the threat perception system is injured. Well, what is a threat perception system, Zion? When people see in danger where other people see a situation that is manageable, that goes back to the hypervigilance. You see something as an immediate danger. A cop flies by or a sheriff flies by and then stop. Oh, my God, what's going on? Hey. Nothing's going on. He's going into that business, that place of business, that building, that home. Oh, he just stopped and now he's taking off again. What's wrong? The average person sees no problem because that particular situation is manageable. But to a person who now has been effectively, from a neurological standpoint, affected by trauma, their threat perception system is damaged or injured. He said, number two, the filtering system is injured. But what is the filtering system in our brain? What is relevant versus non-relevant? Some people can just brush things off. That's not really relevant. Well, another person would say, well, that's very relevant. Well, why did they say that? Why did this person post that on social media? Are they talking about me? Hey, dude, I'm not talking about you. What are you talking about? Triggers. Thirdly, self-censoring system is injured. That means that the physical feelings in the body, i.e. having this gut-wrenching feeling, butterflies in the stomach, or your heart begin to race at a marathon pace. The self-censoring system in your brain is damaged. Now, oftentimes, this leads to unhealthy coping mechanisms, such as addictions and such as chemical dependency. But there must be healthy interventions taking place. So what am I saying in all of this? All of the statistics, all of the facts that you have heard? I believe in the power of prayer. Like any believer and follower of the Most High. But I also believe, like James said, the brother of Jesus, Yeshua. He said, faith without works is dead. I believe that there's some things that we have to gain an education and understanding about in order to be able to be effective in a thing. As opposed to haphazardly, well, let me just pray. No, let me become educated on what you went through. So now, even with the prayers, I can even be targeted with that, but not just praying for you. What can I do for you? See, that's what the producer did. Brings me to this. It's just like God. Here, this woman, the liar, Alice Sebold, that made millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars off of her lies, that it took a producer to do the right thing. Said, listen, I don't really know anything about praying. Oh, he may be an atheist, agnostic. I don't even believe in a God. But something in him said, wait a minute, something's just not right. And God will allow that to be used, that he can ride in on that to allow a producer that's working with Alice on this multi-million-dollar project, this memoir, to walk away from the set and the project, to go into his bank account and to hire a private eye, a private detective, to now look into the case of this man, Anthony Broadwater, who was convicted, but he's released. He's released, but he's still convicted and sentencing, because the man not only gave up 16 years of his life, he now has a criminal record that is tarnished, but now he's on a registry that he doesn't belong on. Something's wrong with this case. Hey, let me hire you. And it's just like God that would use someone who's inquisitive about a lie to bring about the truth.
God today.
And that's who God is using. If he can't use a pastor, if he can't use a bishop, if he can't use a missionary, if he can't use a deacon, he will use an agnostic. He will use an atheist. He will use a Muslim. He will use a Hindu. He will use anybody that's available to free his people, that they can walk into their purpose and that they can give him glory as being a God who does redeem the unredeemable. And to restore that which was that was broken. It's just like God to do that. And it's marvelous in his eyes, and it's certainly marvelous in my eyes. But which serves as an indictment against those of us who say that we follow Jesus, Yeshua, to not become involved in what he says that we ought to become involved in. According to Matthew 25, he says, I was sick and you did not come to me. He said, you did not care for me. I was hungry. You did not clothe me. I was thirsty. You didn't give me drink. I was in prison and you didn't visit me. Well, Messiah, when were you in prison? When were you destitute? When were you without? When you have done it unto the least of them, you have done it unto me. And Hebrews chapter 13 clearly says that we are to remember those who are incarcerated as if we were prisoners ourselves. Those who are downtrodden. And so it becomes a call to action. Not just another call for another conference, not just another call for another prayer meeting. Those things are wonderful. But my question is, are we putting gospel boots to the ground and dealing with realities and injustices as Jesus said, Yeshua said that we ought to do to advance his kingdom? Or are we too busy advancing ours?
God today.
And these are the 7,000 that even God Yahweh himself told Elijah. Listen, I got that 7,000 that think like you, that walk like you, that have a mantle and a mandate just like you. You're not alone. And I'm so grateful that we find them in ministries like the Innocence Project. We find them in ministries like the Exodus Foundation. We find them in ministries that put boots to the ground to not only get those who are POWs out of a warfare type prison, but to make sure that they receive the psychological and therapeutical assistance, to make sure that their needs are met, to make sure that we do get your record expunged, that you can make the money for your family that you ought to make, because best believe it was a lot of money being made on you, bro. And lastly, I'm going to leave you with this. Those states that will not even compensate for the damage that they have done to innocent men and women, black, white, and Latino, I believe that they are under the judgment of the Most High God.
God today.
I'll say it again just for the hearing impaired. Those states, by prosecutorial error and misconduct, those states that have locked up innocent men and women, those states that have men and women marginalized and will not compensate them, but have made money off of them and continue to make money off of them, those states are under the judgment of Almighty God Yahweh. And before I take it back, I'll add more to it. This is a clarion call. Regardless of where you are in clergy, this is a clarion call to the therapeutic community. This is a clarion call to business owners and the like to become involved in injustices, because we are commissioned to. If you are a believer, and if you're not a believer and you're doing that which a believer does, my hat's off to you, because you have more, excuse my vernacular. You have the balls to do what many of us who call ourselves believers won't do. So hats off to you, an indictment against us. But God is calling us to be concerned with the very things that concern him. And I'm going to leave you with this. Those who say that they follow Jesus, Yeshua, do you realize that you follow an ex-felon? No. Not an ex-felon. One who was convicted of a capital offense punishable by death, because all capital crimes are punishable by death. We're the only religion that follows a master, a savior, a redeemer that has not only a criminal record, who was falsely, wrongfully convicted and falsely imprisoned for a crime he didn't commit, but he was also executed on death row. You would think that out of all of the religions on the planet, that those who call themselves Christians would become more involved in cases like these than any other religion. You would think. But if we're not, then that is a heavy indictment. Thank you for joining us on this installment. Can the criminal injustice system be reformed? And my conclusion and my commentary, hell no. Hell no. Yes, and I still love Yeshua, and I'm still bought by him, bought by his blood, saved, a minister of the gospel. Hell no, it can't. Because this system is not broken. This system cannot be reformed. It's too deformed. This system is operating the way that it's supposed to operate, by way of marginalizing and destroying the lives of the poor and the needy and black men and women. So no, this system cannot be reformed. It cannot be saved. It cannot be redeemed. It is too far gone. As a matter of fact, it's operating again the way that it's supposed to operate. So if in fact it is operating by way in which it was created to operate, then why should it be reformed? This is where we come in, through legislation, through dealing with these issues head on, with the power of courage, with the power of God. From a legislative standpoint, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers and rulers of darkness, spiritual wickedness in high places. But where God has given us the power to roam, God has given us the power to own. Until next time, your life begins when you say so.
Thank you for joining us on the Shame Free Life Radio Show for 15 Minutes of Shame. Follow us on IG and Twitter @ Shame Free Life. For information,